Welcome to the Samuel Leeds podcast, and in this episode I'm sat down with Anthony Wilmot, and I just want to talk and pick his brain about some of the good, some of the bad, and how you can be a successful property investor in 2020. So Anthony, what do you think is the biggest reason people fail in this business?
I think a lot of time when people get into property, they see the successes of other people and try to gauge their benchmark against that.
Yeah.
I know when I got into property, that's what I was doing quite a lot, and then I was starting to resent my own journey and starting to resent other people because I wasn't having the same
successes. But you have had the same success. Do you not think that benchmarking your success is a good thing, because it's like, that's possible. If they can do it, I can do it too.
I think it's a great thing, but I think ultimately people need to realize that your journey is yours, and you need to plan it your way. So what I started doing was planning out my own journey, my own goals and what I wanted to achieve. Because then, like you say, if I see people's successes, then I can say, right, that's my next goal. That's what I'm striving towards.
Yeah.
Rather than saying that's an excuse for me to not do something, or that's an excuse for me to say, do you know what? This didn't work for me, really.
I think that it's an interesting one, because like my journey, it took me 4 years to become financially independent. And that was really hard 4 years, like ridiculously hard. And at the time, people saw that and were like, oh my gosh, that's so fast. You did it in 4 years. I started at 17, I was 21. It was like a miraculous story, to the point where I was then asked to go and speak on stages and share it. And it was like, I was the freaky, weird kid that managed to become financially free in 4 years, starting from a teenager. But I feel like I've changed. I've set the bar so high now, because now so many of my students, like, how long did it take you to become financially free?
So I, from when I actually joined Academy, I hit my financial freedom figure by the end of December.
And when, what month did you
sorry, join? November, I joined the Academy. So joined the Academy in November, and I hit my financial freedom figure by the end of December.
Right, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And you started that same year.
Yeah, so I started, I came to the first crash course in May, so I'd already made the arrangements to start. I set my business up at that point. And then,
but that's like 6 months.
Yeah.
So before you did the DFE in the summer. So that's when your advanced training started. So with it way less than a year. See, that's a lot faster than I did it. And there's people that have done it faster than that. And then I go and do my financial freedom challenges. But what people forget is that's me doing a financial freedom challenge with all of my knowledge, with all of my experience, with all of my skills, with all of my confidence, because I've done it a million times before. So I can do it real fast. But I think, whilst that's inspiring for many people and the benchmark is being set really high, and then other people have been able to stand on the shoulders of giants, and it's inspiring and it's empowering, to some people it has the opposite effect, and some people actually find it demoralizing and disempowering because they compare themselves.
Yeah. And I think that's really important, because, you know, I made arrangements to get in. Well, I decided to get into property January 2018, and December was when I became financially free. But to start with, before I came to any formal training or courses, I was comparing myself to people. You know, I was being quite resentful of what other people were doing, because I didn't really know what I was doing, didn't have the right training, right support. But I think once I got all them things in place, and once I knew exactly how to achieve it, everything just happened very quickly, because I knew what I was doing. I knew how to do it. Yeah. And then other people, I was just using them as leverage to help me become successful. So people that were then successful with me, you know, like you said, standing on the shoulders of giants, I was using their experiences to help me get to where I got to quicker.
Yeah, you're like one of the most supportive people on the Academy. Like, literally, you just meet with other Academy members wanting nothing in return, giving people advice, and you regularly post on the groups and say things like, hey, if anyone needs any support. And normally when people say that, there's an agenda, there's an ulterior motive. Like, they're saying it because they then want to sell them a deal or whatever. But with you, it's so genuine. It's from such a position of genuinely wanting other people to succeed. Where did that come from?
Because I know where I came from, and I know when I struggled to start with. Like I said, that point between January and when I came to my first crash course, I knew how difficult it was for me because I didn't know what to do. So, you know, all these people have invested in their education. All these people are making that step to try and become financially independent.
Because you don't meet with people that have not invested themselves first.
You know, and that's it. You know, somebody, they need to invest. And I get that, you know, whether it's with you, whether it's somebody else, investment in education is a big, it's a big choice to make. To invest in your education to become financially independent. So those people have already made the big leap for me. Mm. So I'll give them the time they need. And sometimes it's a case of, do you know what? You need a lot more training and you need to go this way. You need to go that way. So my goal in property is just to put great houses on the market. Yeah. Because I've lived in a crappy property, so I know what they're like.
Yeah, yeah.
So I want to put great houses on the market. So if everybody has the same skills that I have, there's 660,000 empty homes in the UK. There's not competition for me because there's plenty of people going out there and doing the same strategy and putting great properties on the market.
Yeah.
And ultimately, will just help the overall economy.
I think as well, when you've got, I know one, a big part of your strategy now is you buy properties that are really run down, that no one else wants to touch, and then you renovate them and then you refinance them. But like, a lot of people have got, people say that landlords are greedy or they're competing with all the first time buyers. But actually, the definition of entrepreneurship is finding a problem and fixing it. Not competing with other people, it's finding what people aren't doing. James Kahn says, follow the masses and do the opposite. And I think that's, you know, yes, copy entrepreneurs for sure. Copy me for sure. But then ultimately, as you become more successful, once you've done your first few deals, you kind of want to find your own thing, find your own niche where people aren't necessarily doing it. Something that where you can bring tremendous value and then just push that for all it's worth. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with that. And that's the thing. I mean, when I hear people say that, you know, landlords are coming in and being greedy, I don't think that's true because, you know, as a nation, we're becoming a nation of renters. So there's more people out there wanting to rent properties now than there are buy them. Yeah. So, and you know, there's entrepreneurs out there, property investors that do flips and strategies. So they are providing for first time buyers because ultimately people can just walk into a new house then that somebody's refurbed.
Yeah.
And then there are people that are doing the buy, refurbish, refinance, rent strategy. These are the people that are providing for, you know, where councils can't provide for houses. They're providing for people that just want to rent a nice house in an area because for them at the time where they're building their family or they're building their career, that's exactly the way they want to go.
Mm.
So, I think exactly that's why they're doing it.
Mm. You've been speaking a lot recently and I've been coaching you a bit. Talk to me about that.
So obviously myself and Ricky and some other Academy members came onto some speaker training with you because we wanted to better ourselves. We wanted to be able to share the knowledge that we've got in the right way to help people take in that information and learn it.
Why do you want to be a speaker?
Because I want to inspire people the way that you and other speakers have inspired me. Because I've been to many seminars and sometimes you sit there and you're nodding off and you're going to sleep. But when somebody like yourself comes on with the right energy and the right movements, it, you know, it allows me to take in information better. Mm. That's how I work. I take in information by listening and watching and doing people.
What's this book? Have you got stuff? Have you got anything juicy in there?
So this is just so I bought this journal recently because I want to keep because I find I'm getting so busy now with speaker training and coming to events a lot and then helping people that I wasn't managing my time very well.
Yeah.
So I looked to get a journal because I want to obviously put my career goals into perspective. I want to put plans for the day. So it's not just a case of, right, this is a to-do list of the day. Every day, you know, it's got inspiring quotes in there. It also allows me to reflect on things that have happened in the day because I think it is important. Too many people go through the day and think, well, I didn't really achieve anything today or that was a rubbish day. So every day I take the time to reflect on what's happened.
That's good.
You know, what successes have I had today? What could I improve on today? And that allows me then to just close that day down and then move on to the next one.
Tell me about your experience the very first time I got you on stage at the Crash Course.
So do you know what? The very first time I got on stage at the Crash Course, I was actually terrified. So I remember you saying to me, if you carry on the way you go and you keep being successful, and because I become financially free, you said, we've got the first ever Crash Course in London. 1,000 people, I'd like to invite you on stage. And I thought, this will be a breeze. I'll come and get on stage and tell people what I've done. And I got up there and stood and looked out to these crowd of people. And my mouth went dry. And I thought, I don't really know what to say. And I was very lucky that you're there because obviously you asked questions and you coached me through it. But had I have just had the opportunity to get up and just start talking to people, it really gave me that feeling of I respect what speakers do, because to be able to get up and present and to talk to people, you know, that abundance of people not knowing how they're going to react and not knowing how they're going to perceive you as a person, it gave me a new respect for it.
I think the reason that I wanted you to be a speaker as well is because you've been there, done it, got the t-shirt, and I know that you did it really fast, but now you've been financially free for quite a long time now. You've been in property for how long?
So I quit my job January 2019.
Okay, so that was just over a year
just
ago.
Just over a year ago. Came to DfE May 2018, joined the
so
academy.
So it's coming up to a couple of years that you first got started.
Yeah.
So you've been there, done it, got the T-shirt, got a bit of experience, and sometimes people act really almost smug, you know, I've been in property 20 years. And it's like, yeah, but you suck. And you've got 3 buy-to-lets that don't make any money. And you say you've got 20 years experience, but really you have 1 year's experience photographed 20 times. So I'd rather learn from someone like Anthony that's got a nice portfolio that's very profitable with a diverse mix of rent-to-SAs, HMOs, BRRs. So that's the first thing. Second thing is the fact that your story is so powerful, because when you met me, you were in a very different place. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that.
So one of the reasons why I wanted to get into property in the first place was because, you know, I was having a bit of a tough time.
You followed the status quo.
Yeah, I followed the system.
Which, you know, the government want you to follow.
Go out, get a good job, get good grades, you know, work hard, buy a house, you know, get married, have children. So this was the route I was going down. I was working hard. So
I wrote something about that. Listen to this. Because you followed this plan. You followed the government, the school education system, the banks. You followed their plan. And this is their plan. I'm going to go through each category of people, persons, thing and describe their agenda. Government, they want to have complete control over you and everything. And they need you poor and dependent to do this. The super rich, they want financial literacy saved for themselves so they can have all the money. Banks, they want all the money, all your money, so that they can invest it themselves. Education system, they're not allowed to teach anything that's not in the government appointed curriculum. The media, they sell bad news stories to get more views, but ultimately controlled by the government. The general public are mostly slaves to the system, but looking forward to retirement age 65. And then there's me. Rich, financially free, and showing thousands of others exactly how to do the same in order to leave a legacy and change the system.
I think that's it. And I think the problem is following that government system is...
They force it on you.
The minute you lose something, you have nothing left.
What happened to you? You lost your partner?
So yeah, and then potentially was going to lose my house that I'd put all my money into buying.
Yep.
At the same time, because of the economy, I potentially was going to get made redundant from my job.
Yep.
So all of a sudden, this big system that I'd worked towards, getting this great job, getting this great house...
Working hard at uni?
Meant nothing, you know. Yeah. And my university degree, you know, although it taught me some great life skills, now wasn't really helping me. We're talking 10 years down the line from when I achieved that degree.
Yeah.
So then all that happens is if I did lose my job at that point, or even the people that were then applying to replace me in my job,
yeah,
their skills and qualifications, you know, and my skills and qualifications didn't matter for nothing. Yeah. It was a case of whoever was better for the job. So yeah, my university degree 10 years down the line didn't help me at all. You know,
and you worked well. You were a manager.
Yeah,
I
was a department manager at Sainsbury's. You know, good job, great department, great store. And then all of a sudden, everything starts moving around, and your whole life gets changed around from you. And that was just it. Like, I just couldn't deal with it anymore.
What was your lowest point?
My lowest point was, I suffered with depression because of, you know, things go up and down for me, and you know, I had nobody around. You know, so because my partner left and, you know, I'd moved to another town, saw all my friends, she took them with her. So then I was stuck in this town on my own with no friends and my family, you know, quite far away from me. So I didn't really know what to do. And, you know, when you're left in your own in that situation and it's just you, then your thoughts take over, and that's when your mind starts to kick in.
Mm.
And that's when it starts to take over from you. And this is one of the reasons why I help people so much now, because I know how much, when your mind turns against you, you've got nothing.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing that keeps you going.
Isolation, bad thing.
Exactly. And, you know, I was isolated, and I'd isolated myself as well. So even though my family are great and supportive, I'd made a conscious decision to isolate myself.
So funny, because when you came to the DfE, you were so not... You didn't seem like that in that place. I don't know where you were at.
The thing is, you know, 9 times out of 10, most people can't point somebody out with depression or anxiety in a crowd.
Yeah.
Because we put a front on, you know, and I can spot them a mile away. I can see these people.
I can't spot them. That's the part of the problem.
Until you've been there, until you've been in that situation, you'll never understand what it's like.
But I warmed to you, and I remember at the deal finding extravaganza, I was like, we were chatting a lot, and I was working with you on the coaching call. I called you out and asked you to come and speak on that because I knew that you were going to be successful. But then the sometimes I see potential in people, and this is the problem that I have. I'll see so much potential in someone, but then when they then give up, it like breaks my heart because I've almost pictured them at this point of success. I visualize it and I'm like, yes, and I see it for them. But sometimes they need to see it for themselves.
Yeah.
You know, and I think you did. I think you saw it for yourself.
I think that's it. That's the tough part is when people don't see it for themselves, they'll never strive for it.
Mm.
And
they'll get hit the first hurdle and think, oh, it's not possible.
It's not for me.
So what are some of the biggest hurdles that you've had over the last 6 months?
I think some of the biggest hurdles for me are really around the mindset piece, really around just dealing with you know, overcoming problems that things have come along. Because when you you know, when you make phone calls to agents and you know they shoot you down, or they can be quite vicious sometimes on the phone.
Yeah, you probably because the agents that we're speaking with have received phone calls from people that have watched my YouTube videos, attempted to do the do, but not done it with the correct knowledge, and then the agent's been pissed off. And then when people like you or I phone, the agents are like, oh, I've heard this before. Unserious investors, people that are deal sourcers, but then they buy the deal and they haven't got anyone to sell it to and then waste our time. So we end up picking the slack up for that. And at times people have even said to me, you know, Samuel, you shouldn't even teach YouTube, you know, don't do it because people, you know, people just attempt and fail. But ultimately, because of people like you that watch the YouTube videos and then came to the crash course and have done it properly, you know, gives me motivation to keep going. But yeah, I know those calls you're talking about.
But that can really put you down. And when you come off the phone, you think, maybe I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's about celebrating the successes.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest thing I've taken away from the last year or so that I've been doing this is to celebrate the successes.
Mm.
You know, so every week I must reflect on what's happened and celebrate the little successes. Because you can be too hard on yourself. I mean, when we started speaker training, both Ricky and I, every time we come off the stage, so hard on ourselves.
Mm.
But then you can end up, it can be the reverse. Because if you've got to go back on the stage, then you're not putting your best foot forward. And actually, you're disservicing the people that are in the room.
Yeah.
And that's not fair on them people then, because they've come to see the best that they can get.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that you want to be the best you can be, but you don't want to be so hard on yourself you beat yourself up.
Yeah.
But I think you've been great with the speaking. I mean, honestly, I remember when you first did your first like 15 minute piece on stage on your own, completely on your own. Do you remember that?
Yes.
What happened?
So I planned it out, and again, like I said, when you get up on the stage there, it kind of takes over, and you feel like you can't make any moves. But really, there's things that, you know, the people just want to take the information in. And I had a moment where I froze and I didn't really know what to do because there was nobody like you there asking me questions. And
yeah, like on the stage with you.
Yeah,
you're on your own.
I'd forgot my content. But I, you know, it just took me a second to think, actually, I've delivered so much content to them already that let's give them a second to take in the information that they've learned, which gave me that breathing time to review what I was doing and to come back quite strong.
That was only like 4 months ago.
Yeah.
How you've come on.
I got some great feedback from that, from the people that took in the information as well. So it just goes to prove how hard you can be on yourself.
Mm.
And actually, you know, they've took the information in really well. But it's just about now I just want to grow to be better.
Now you've almost become addicted to speaking on stage.
I love it.
And inspiring people. But you know what? The messages that you get when you come off the stage, you know, and you'll have this now. The people saying like, oh my gosh, you know, you've changed my life. I've just done a deal because of your, you know, that must be really, really liberating and satisfying for you.
I get lots of messages like that now saying, really loved hearing you speak. Really loved the piece that you presented. I thought it was great. Can't believe you've only been doing this a short period of time. And then, but that leads on to longer lasting relationships.
Yeah.
Because again, these are all people that have invested in their education. These are all people that are on the journey as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, it just allows me to then help them a little bit further because I know that, actually, you really liked my piece. Then that means that that's the strategy you want to go with. And again, like I said, that helps me serve my purpose.
You've also written a book.
Yes.
In collaboration with a few other people. I published it. Let me see this. Making property compliance easy, Talk to me about why you wrote, well, why we wrote this book.
So we got together, and the things that are in this book have taken me 15 months to find out some of the information in there. And some of the, because they're the really little things that people don't know about. And, you know, so it might be the little details about how to set up a joint venture, how you can raise different types of finance, whether it be through joint ventures, and what them agreements look like. And yeah, it's all the little things that, and they're very specific questions. And what's good about the book is some of the things that are in there, if you were to present them in a room full of people, only 20-30% of the room might be interested in parts of it.
Yeah.
So the book's great because it's there. It's a quick tool to go back to, you know, oh, I'm looking at setting up a...
But we talk, you talk about, well, there's tax, there's compliance in every aspect, deal sourcing, rent to rent, option agreements, joint venture, raising finance, just buying a house, tenants, setting up the business. You know, it's a phenomenal guide. And I think that I used to get so many questions about this sort of stuff. So it's just great that you've helped write this book. And have you had good feedback?
Yeah, I've had some good feedback. So sent the first couple of copies to parents, friends and family. They've really enjoyed it. And then the last couple of events, I actually had two people come up to me and say, I've read your book, really enjoyed it. Some great content in there.
It's good.
It just makes it a quick guide for people to go to.
From a branding perspective, there's nothing better than writing a book.
I must admit, I really enjoyed writing it.
But when you write a book, not only do you serve people, but you also position yourself as an authority in a subject. So it just kind of makes you the go-to person, which I think from a branding perspective is just insane. And I'm really glad that I've managed to help some people become authors. Hannah Mills, James Armstrong, yourself. I mean, you've been getting some serious high-profile people. I know I've been connecting you as well with some cool people. Talk to me a bit about that.
So...
the little WhatsApp messages that you get. Wow. What do you think when you see my name pop up on WhatsApp? You're like, oh yeah.
Like, I see the message Samuel Leeds, and it's like referrals, and I think, oh great. Well, who's this going to be this time?
But it's always someone famous.
It's somebody great. I mean, we've had three high-profile footballers that have come to us, and these are people that you know, for them, they've made their money. They've, you know, and now they're trying to be clever with it. They're trying to invest for their future. And again, I really respect that, because it's like, look, we haven't got time. We're still busy with work, their work, you know, to invest in education. But we want to find somebody that is the go-to person on a specific strategy to help us find the right properties to invest, because we want to make our money go further.
Yeah.
And they're great people to work with, because they get it. They understand. They've seen all your content. They've done lots of research.
Yeah, what happens
themselves
is they'll come to me for a bit of mentoring or a bit of guidance. But then they haven't got the time to go and view properties and stuff. So I'll pass them to you, because I haven't got the time either, to be honest. But you've got so many deals coming out of your ears. And sometimes I think, this person could really connect well with Anthony or James or Ricky or whoever. And I love to pass referrals that way. And you know, whenever you get a WhatsApp message from me, you know, it's always good news.
Always good news.
It's never bad news. You get a message from me, it's always good news. So what are your plans over 2020?
So this year, James and I are focusing on some bigger developments. So now I have enough properties where rent to rent, buy refurbs and lease options that are making me enough money for that continued cash flow each month. I'm trying to focus on doing bigger deals because I want to achieve my goal quicker. So this is why we focused on the pub that we're looking to do, because we want to focus on trying to look at like these tier two towns where the town's gone quite low, the footfall in the town's really low, and take empty buildings in there if we can and turn them from commercial to residential, because then it provides housing for people and it also drives footfall into the town as well.
Yeah,
so it just helps everything then.
I think there's no worse luck or position than being in a desperate place. Mm. And when you're viewing houses and trying to do deals and sell deals and you're desperate, you're really motivated to get financially free, then suddenly you're a motivated investor when you want to be dealing with motivated sellers.
Yeah.
And it flips it around and it makes it even harder. So you now being in a position of complete abundance, financial freedom, and some people at your stage will say, oh, I'm just going to retire now. But you're saying, no, I'm coming from a position of abundance and now I'm going to scale this thing and do some big deals from a position of, I want to. I want to leave a legacy. I want to inspire people. I want to make more money, give more money, and be more. I think that's a really good place. So I'm super excited. Piece of advice, final piece of advice for someone listening to this who's where you were 2 years ago, who's wanting to become successful in property, what would you say?
I think that the final piece of advice for me is you need to have very clear goals about what you want to achieve. And if it's, you need to, because you're looking to build a big legacy, or even if you're just trying to become as wealthy as possible, you need to streamline your expenses to start with, because you've got to be realistic about what you want to achieve, and then focus on setting very clear goals, you know, refreshing them every month or so, and then using that to couple with your education and your learning, whether it be through books, videos, or coming to courses, and get yourself in the right place at the right time and networking with as many people as you can, because, you know, ultimately when you start out, it's about building that network of people and knowledge. And once you build that and use that to couple with your goals, you'll go very far.
That's great. And if people want to see you, they'll probably be able to see you at a crash course, because you pretty much go to every crash course, which is insane. Awesome. Thanks so much for your time, bro.
Thanks,
I'm sure,
man.
People appreciated it. Guys, if you appreciated the content, if you enjoyed listening to Anthony, you can connect with him on social media. You can come and see us at the crash courses and hang out, become successful. But please don't forget to smash the like button if you're watching on YouTube. And if you're watching on podcasts, how about go and check us out and leave us a review on the podcast show. Appreciate you. Love you. Hope to see you soon. And God bless.